Hey you, out there on your own, sitting naked by the phone, would you touch me? It's time for the Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. I'm your deadpan host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. Oh, not that fucking guy again. This episode features an interview with the ultimate creative guy, the publisher behind Spherical Tomy and the original Dark Moonfire novella, as well as a number of titles from authors with actual talent. Let's have a deadpan welcome for Uncle Pete Allen. His interview will be coming up later on in the show. That in addition to the usual deadpan crap. So let's get things rolling with a word from someone else, and then we'll come back with something not heard before on the deadpan. That's right, not the usual crap.
Hello, my name is Jimmy. I live in Denver. You are listening to Jackie Magnum's Deadpan Podcast. I like him. He makes me giggle.
Kilroy 2.0 is here. Kilroy 2.0 is everywhere. Do not believe the lies of the Tomorrow Research Institute. The organization is a sham, a ruse, a Halloween mask hiding truths larger and much more dangerous than the world knows. Do not contact the Tomorrow Research Institute. You are not a person to them. You are insignificant, nothing more than one of many, nothing more than a member of the Faceless Horde. I have hacked into the TomorrowResearch.com database. I have gathered evidence, proof, audio recordings of their plans. People across the world are infected. They are compromising their autonomy by calling the Tomorrow Research Institute. It is an epidemic. It is an infection raging across the globe. But I have delivered my data to two men who will distribute it across the podosphere. They will share the truths that I've discovered. You must listen to the Slice of Sci-Fi podcast released on June 6th. There, my faithful and expendable flock members, Michael and Evo, will share these recordings I've discovered with the world. Please, listen. The Tomorrow Research Institute is not real. It is dangerous. Do not visit tomorrowresearch.com. Do not contact these deceivers. Be a believer. Expose the conspiracy. Go to sliceofsci-fi.com to excavate the truth. Listen to the podcast on June 6th, 2006. Six. 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 Kilroy 2.0 was here. Kilroy 2.0 is everywhere.
So the Deadpan research team has gone back in time and uncovered some very disturbing information. I present now parallels between the original Star Wars series and the Dukes of Hazzard. Both feature a blonde guy and a brown-haired guy as the male leads, making their way the only way they know how. Both feature grumpy, lovable, white-bearded, avuncular old-timers in Uncle Jesse and Ben Kenobi. Both have a weird, incestuous subtext thing going on with the male and female leads, Luke's sister Leia and cousin Daisy Duke. Both feature main characters named Luke. In both, Luke lives on a farm with his cranky, hick uncle. Both are noted for their music. The Boar's Head equals a creepier, rowdier version of the Mos Eisley Cantina. Neither one has any black people. Oh right, and when one finally does show up, he ends up double-crossing them. The General Lee Horn plays Dixie. Luke's X-Wing has R2-D2's beeps and whistles. Both were popular in the late 70s, early 80s. Both recently made attempts to revisit the franchises, but to mixed reactions. Neither one had David Hasselhoff. Both feature the hot female lead in a bikini at some point. Both feature many scenes of mechanical work being done. One features... The other features... Both feature vehicles performing aerial stunts which defy the laws of physics. And can we draw parallels between Boss Hogg and the Emperor, sitting back running things behind the scenes, while his main henchman, Vader / Roscoe P. Coltrane, actively pursues and harasses the heroes? I think the Jabba the Hutt and Boba Fett is a closer match. George Lucas's most blatant plagiarism of Boss Hogg would come in the second trilogy in the form of Boss Nass. This concludes the first half of our investigation. Tune in to next week's Deadpan to learn more about this symbiotic, mutually beneficial relationship between these two franchises.
Okay, everybody. Everybody? Seeing as how I got your attention now, poor Pastor Kavanaugh is still recovering from his run-in with that very varmint we aim to hunt down today. We have to catch him before this happens to some other poor innocent citizen. Boys, bring the pastor up.
Woo!
Well, you can see for yourselves what this evil desperado is capable of. As secretary of this here town, I deputize all of you listening to go out and find Deadpan Jack Mangan and bring him to justice. He can usually be found around that Far Point Media place, so you just go down there to the Central Cortex, sign on, and make sure you go and listen to his podcast very carefully. There's a reward of 500 credits for the person who finds his whereabouts. Now, who's brave enough to go out and ride with me?
I am no coward. No way, no how. No way gonna be right now, no way Dallas Wagon Bender. And I'm gonna wind a cowpoke and then they'll stick and bend a stinking big dick cutter.
Okay, folks. We're counting on you. Come on, Gabby. Let's go.
Alright, well, Deadpanites, we're trying again. This is Pete Allen, the editor-in-chief at Liaison Press and Creative Guy Publishing. We actually tried once to interview you before, and it went, we had great conversation, just, you know, it didn't record well. So now we're going to try to duplicate that exact conversation with the same jokes and everything.
All right. Luckily, I recorded it. Typed it as we were talking. No, not really.
Alright, so then... Go ahead, Pete, and tell the fine folks a little bit about yourself and, you know, why you're here on the Deadpan.
Well, hello, folks. I am here on the Deadpan as a interview subject to shamelessly plug all the books that I publish with Creative Guy Publishing and Liaison Press. A couple of those happen to involve Jack Mangan, so you can probably make the connection yourself.
Yay!
Yay!
Which titles are those?
Which titles? Let me see. I have to go through my records, but I believe it's Spherical Tomy and the Amityville House of Pancakes, Volume 1.
That's right. Which is the first in a set of three.
First in a set of... the third one will be this year, and hopefully we'll keep going. We'll have to see how that goes, but yeah. So far response has been pretty good.
Yeah, it's been a success, and, you know, wish you continued success. I mean, I loved being a part of the first one. I'm really proud of that, so... I totally railroaded... You're plugging your self-promotion there, but let's do this right now since AHOP 3 is this year and you have some great names associated with it. Go ahead and just do that and then get back to how great you are.
But first, the books. We have The Unhardy Boys in Outer Space by Gary K. Wolfe and Father Jasper J. Moyers. This is the Gary K. Wolfe of Roger Rabbit, not the Gary K. Wolfe of...
What? Of Locus.
Locus, that's,
who,
yeah. Right.
Who I met and said, oh!
And hey, he's... congratulations on your acceptance. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, what are the odds, right? Like same middle initial in the works, but yeah.
Right.
So this is the Roger Rabbit, the parent of Roger Rabbit, and Father Jasper J. Moyers is his writing partner, and they've got a story called The Unhardy Boys in Outer Space.
Cool.
Paul Kane, who has written a number of Dalton Quayle tales. Dalton Quayle is his character, who's a spoof of Sherlock Holmes, and are just absolutely brilliantly funny. And we've got one a Dalton Quayle story in this year's version, actually, called Dalton Quayle and the Curse of King Tutti Frutti.
Cool.
Uncle River's coming to see us again. He had a story in last year's version, and he's got a story this year called Shiva Not Dancing. And K.M. Prashak is giving us a story called Paragon.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Very cool.
And Chris Cox is doing the cover. He's done a number of the covers for us. Chris is the one of the co-owners of Dare Cards, darecards.com, another shameless plug. They do humorous greeting cards.
Yeah, Chris Cox is a very talented artist, very good. So, I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing the cover of AHOP 3.
I've seen the previews. It's good. It's a good cover.
Okay.
All of our covers actually have been really good. I've been really, really pleased with not just the covers of the Amityville House of Pancakes series, but just our covers in general. We've had some really talented artists working with creative guys. So.
Right. Actually, the way you said that in the last interview was a lot funnier, though.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, sorry.
Now, oh, actually, well.
I love all of the Creative Guy and Liaison covers, the AHOP covers. I love the cover for Spherical Tomy. The Funny Bones cover is really good with the skeletons and it's the Blues Brothers.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, great looking books. That's one thing that CGP has definitely done very well.
Yes, I hope so.
So go ahead. Let's get back to Pete Allen, though.
Oh, right. Let's see. What do we want to talk about?
I usually like to do a past, present, future arc. So let's do that for, I guess you as a publisher, you know, I mean, and we'll figure out how CGP works. And let's talk about the swamp and just all of your roots and stuff like that.
Right. The phrase creative guy actually came way before I ever started any of the literary endeavors. It came from a conversation with at the time, unemployed friend of mine. I was also unemployed. We were spending a lot of time at the coffee house, and which is amazing how you can do that when you're unemployed and not have money. But we just talked about stuff that we wanted to do, and somehow he came up with the phrase Pete Allen, creative guy. And he was the first one to get a job in a print shop, so he made some business cards for me and actually said that. I think just as practice more than anything else, but the phrase kind of stuck, so I kept it around. And when I was looking for a name for the publishing company, I thought, oh, there you go, that'll work.
Okay.
But then the publishing company didn't come about until much later. I started with the Swamp magazine, which was basically an online magazine, but it was also a sort of writing community, folks who just were interested in reading and writing, and that grew. And actually, I only recently took it offline because it was just, the interest had waned quite a bit. I think the lifespan of a internet magazine that I've seen so far, there's a few that managed to last, but the lifespan seems to be a good 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And some don't even make it that long. I think we were just at 4.5 years when I took it off, but I've maintained the domain, and I'm going to do something with it. I don't know if we're tossing around the idea of doing a literary magazine and probably another online community as a sort of backup for that.
Okay.
But yeah, anyway, so The Swamp was an online magazine. It did very well, and Creative Guy grew from that. We had a lot of people who were sort of interested in exploring ebooks and online alternative media, let's say. And none of us really knew anything about ebooks. So, and then I came across a site one time where I saw that people were selling PDFs and calling them ebooks. So I thought, well, there's got to be more to it than that. And turns out that at the time there really wasn't much more to it than that. So I looked into it and looked into other ebook sites and saw what other sort of formats were out there, and convinced the authors to have a little experiment. And I registered the name in Vancouver, in British Columbia, where we're still based, and went from there. I looked into just basically how ebooks worked and who was doing them, and started doing them. And we did them as novellas first, and well, we still do. We focus on novellas because they seem to be a good format that was really ignored and really appropriate to ebook type things. So we started with five and just went from there.
Yeah, we did actually have that discussion last time. Did also, we? It went really well, so yeah, hopefully it'll
rant?
Go well.
Did I rant enough last time? Because I can really rant about that.
No, I'm looking forward to that. But my legit question here, though, is what year was that?
The Swamp went online in 2004, or I'm sorry, 2001, and mm-hmm. Creative Guy, if I remember it, was February 2003.
Okay.
Yeah, you know about then.
Yeah, and actually, I remember around 2001 was when we all, were all convinced that e-books were the absolute future, and that within 3 years, Barnes & Noble and Borders would be, you know, everything was right. going to be gone. No right. more paper books, which
right,
obviously
exactly. didn't happen, and frankly, won't happen for our lifetime. Like, it's just, I was just reading, actually, since our last interview, I was just looking at some of the publishing news, and it looks like publishing, the number of books released this year dropped for the first time in the last 5 or 6 years. So, and not sort of to a noticeable degree. It was basically just enough that the UK released more books than the US last year. And I mean, but those statistics are primarily based on like major publishers. There's very little attention given to the small press when they cite those kind of statistics.
Okay.
So yeah, print isn't going anywhere.
Right. Sure, there are handheld readers, but there's nothing as portable and just as user-friendly as a book.
Right. A lot of the portable readers, people that read ebooks regularly and that enjoy and buy ebooks are fans. They buy one kind of ebook, and they buy an ebook specific to whatever kind of reader they have. And I think they're more fans of the technology than, you know, specifically wanting to read on a device. Like, I think they like whatever kind of reader they have.
Now, this is really a very bold step for, you know, for a grassroots publisher, because, you know, as we just kind of defined, ebooks are very niche, and novellas are even more. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone says novella is just an impossible length. Everyone says we want short stories, or, you know, we'll take novels, but right. no one will. So you're trying, you know, and actually you've done really well considering that you're focused on two real, you know, niche medias and formats.
Yeah, I think the two formats, I mean, two different sort of animals, but I think they go together really well. I think the novella, mm-hmm. I mean, because an ebook, you know, can just sort of be however long you want it to be. You could sell an ebook short story if you wanted to.
Right.
The novella is definitely really suited toward it. I mean, it really works really well. You can have something that's sort of substantial enough to engage the reader and yet not have to, like, exhaust somebody's eyesight by having them read online.
Right. And you know, as a writer, as you know, as we're both writers and people who are interested in writing, mm-hmm. sometimes you don't need to go all the way to, like, you know, 70,000 words or something. And sometimes, you know, 5, 6, 7,000 words won't cut it. So, I mean,
right.
I think a novella is a necessary format. I mean,
yeah.
It's...
I think so. I mean, and everybody's definitions are a little bit different. There's like Fantasy and Science Fiction magazine has a different, I think, standard for novella than we do. I'm not sure what their word length is, but they have another form in there called the novelette. And
right.
I don't really know. I think at that point you're getting sort of, you know, it's a number crunching game. Like, I just call it a novella and say, okay,
right.
between 15 and 40,000 words, that'll work for me.
Yeah, whatever suffix you want to put on it, you know, novello, you know, whatever, novellish.
It's, yeah, it's novellette.
Right.
Novellina.
Yes. So now let's jump ahead. I know I said we're going to go past, present, future, but since we're on this topic anyway, you know, mm-hmm. fuck the rules. We'll do it how we want. yeah.
We can swear. I totally forgot that.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Go ahead.
No, it has to come natural. I can't just swear for the sake of swearing.
Oh, sure you can.
My mother would smack me.
All
right. Ah, fuck it. All right.
So let's talk about now. You are, that's where CGP and the Swamp and Liaison Press has been. But you know, I know you do have a different scope for the future. Since we're on the topic, let's delve into that.
Okay. Well, AHOP will be a going concern for as long as people keep buying it and enjoying it. Liaison Press is. Let me talk about Liaison Press for a minute, because it's a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple submissions from writers whose works I had already published in other formats. The main one being Doug Texter, and I had published an ebook by him called "You're Not Very Important: 12 Steps Away from Self-Esteem and Toward a Safer World." And It's a nonfiction satire of self-help manuals. It's brilliantly mm-hmm. funny, but it's not fiction. And sort of so Creative Guy Publishing, I sort of had focused as fiction, so I thought, oh, okay, well, we better have an imprint. So I looked up the rules for imprints, and apparently you can just have an imprint. No, there's no rules about imprints. So I came up with Liaison Press, and basically, if anybody submits an idea to me for Creative Guy, and I think it might be interesting or it might work, then I'll put it under Liaison's envelope, if it's not fiction, if it's not, you know, a straightforward submission of what I'm looking for Creative Guy, then I'll consider it for Liaison Press, which is how we end up with titles like You're Not Very Important, mm-hmm. or Random Acts of Malice, The Best of Happy Woman magazine, which was another really good satire of women's magazines that's an online magazine, happywomanmagazine.com, and we just released a best of for them. So the future of Liaison Press is just sort of whatever happens that I think looks interesting but doesn't fit into the usual guidelines. With Creative Guy, we've released two chapbooks, soon to be the third chapbook, Spherical Tomy, will be the third title, and the only reason it wasn't second was we've had some challenges with the print length of it, but we're looking for mm-hmm. alternative methods on that. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be actually, by the time, I think we mentioned this last time, so yeah. This time it'll really be true, but by the time this interview goes to air, that should be on sale as well. Chatbooks and audiobooks. We're looking at audiobooks as well because there just seems to be a real interest. As you're listening to a podcast, you can probably attest, there's a real interest in audio formats. So,
right. Yeah, actually, most of my listeners have come to know me through the Dragon Page, but also through my Podio book, you know, which mm-hmm. is the audio book of Spherical Tomy. So let's talk about those. I mean, obviously, you know, this is my self-serving way to get to this Spherical Tomy print chapbook, which I've gotten a lot of questions about it. So I mean, there's a lot of interest. So it's going to be huge. It's going to be top the bestseller list.
It's phenomenal.
Right. It's going to be the
chapbook revolution.
Yes. Well, let's talk about the three that are out. I know the first one was Adrian Jones, who's
Temple of Cod, which is just a really, like everything she writes, is really pretty wacky. Good storyline. Like, she's a good, solid writer, but yeah, she's just, I think she ate lead paint as a kid or something. There's just some stuff in there that I'm just like, wow.
People need to read her. She's really she's really smart and really funny and really
she's a smart writer. And Witching Hour Theater by Craig Schaefer just came out, and which is a really good, solid, straightforward, just slasher horror story. It's just mm-hmm. great. Like, it's got everything you want.
Right. Great reviews.
Bad guys in crazy masks. It's got, you know, beheadings. I mean, really, what more can you ask for?
Great reviews on that one too. And that one's really, you know, also made a nice impact.
Yeah, it's doing really well.
And the third.
And the third, dun dun dun, it's Spherical Tomy by our own Jack Mangan. An absolutely outstanding piece of cyberpunk fiction.
Oh, well, thank you. Now, actually, what is interesting about this one is not only, you know, what I do find interesting about this one, obviously, other than my own self-interest, is that it's going to be, the format's going to be really crazy. It's going to be a really an experiment.
Yeah, this is going to be, and you know, here's the thing, too. A lot of people keep beating me to the punch. As I mentioned before, one of the issues we had with Spherical Tomy in the printing side as a chapbook is that it ended up being like 108 pages or something, because it's a pretty substantial story. And so that was the format that I had used for the earlier chapbooks was a straight 5x8 or so. That ended up being too thick for sort of a affordable binding. And so now I'm going with a bigger format, and it's going to be actually released in magazine format, like magazine size sort of format, a full sheet. And I was like literally just today looking online at one of the online vendors for the small press, and somebody else has just released a book in that size. So, you know, at least we're not, you know, completely out to lunch on that. We're not the only ones doing it, but yeah.
Yeah,
it should be really exciting, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see it. I guess basically to put this in perspective, Temple of Cod and Witching Hour Theater are basically the size of Asimov's or Analog or Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction.
Yeah, they're a little bit larger than Digest, but not much.
Right.
They're, I guess, I don't know, what's half of 11? 5.5. So 5.5 by 8.5.
Okay.
in the printing world. That's four pages per sheet of paper or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Spherical Tome is actually going to be like, you know, a normal magazine size. Like,
yeah, like magazine, just like...
Like Winter Zone from our...
Winter Zone, where... two of my very, very good authors at Creative Guy have stories in Inner Zone currently. One of them being Jack Mangan, and the other one being Carlos Hernandez, who wrote The Last Generation to Die, which is as a solo ebook, but also part of AHOP 2.
Right. Right. Well, and also, I mean, I actually really wasn't going there. I swear to God. I also wanted to plug our friend, let's say his name, right? Yetzi DeVries.
Yetzi DeVries. I'm glad, actually, for the single fact that I slaughtered his name last time we talked, because I had no idea how to pronounce it. That's one reason I'm glad that the last interview kind of crashed. But and Yetzi is, he's one of the, I think there's three or four assistant editors for Inner Zone.
Right,
and he's one of them, and he's your man who reads the email submissions when writers are able to send in email submissions, which I think is only like two or three times a year.
Right,
they have email periods. He's the one that he's sort of single-handedly taken that on. So,
right,
which is moderately suicidal.
But I mean, it's, you know, it is a good magazine, and he's you know, he's very dedicated. He really loves what he does, and
exactly.
And as we said last,
The reason that he's our very good friend, Yetzi DeVries, is he's also a CGP author. He had a story in the very first Amityville House of Pancakes, along with Jack Mangan and Adrian Jones.
That's right. And J.D. Wells was the fourth.
Wells.
And this is the last time I'm going to totally railroad, you know, your interview where we're trying to feature you. But I'm also, you know, we did talk last time how, you know, if you're a disgruntled author, first of all, don't send angry rebuttals to your rejections. Just don't, because it's rude and dumb. But definitely don't. If you see Yetzi,
that's right.
He's a big guy.
He's a big guy. Yeah. Don't. If you do get a submission or a rejection from Inner Zone that doesn't please you, keep it to yourself. just that's the one time that you want to swallow it and suck it up. Because yeah, he's a big dude, and he like eats cars for breakfast or something.
Yeah, you know, right. Well, he's in Europe, so he eats minis.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a mini, but, you know, still.
First you want to kill me, now you want to kiss me. Blow.
So as we take a break from the Pete Allen interview, I just want to remind you that there is an open door. You can submit any dumbass memory, stolen rap lyric, a highbrow, lowbrow, whatever you want. You know the skits. Submit, you know, whatever you want here, and we'll play it. Send it to the voicemail. It's 206-350-TOMI, 8664. Or record it yourself if you want and send me the file. Coming up right now, to round out this break, we have Mark Foreman doing exactly that, answering the open call for submissions. Mark actually went and gave us a variety of segments. Thanks, Brooklyn Blues Man. You're our hero.
Hi, this is Mark Foreman, Brooklyn Blues Man from Getting a Leg Up podcast. I'm here to bring you some highbrow, lowbrow, Star Wars, Jedi mind tricks, David Letterman's stupid pet tricks. Here's an absurd memory. My birth. I was there. It rained really hard that day. Stolen rap lines. OPP by Naughty by Nature. OPP, how can I explain it? I'll take you frame by frame it. To have y'all jumping, shall we singin' it? O is for other, P is for people. Scratching temple. The last P, well, that's not that simple. It's sorta like another way to call a cat a kitten. It's five little letters that are missing here. You get on occasion at the other party. As a gayman, it seems I gotta start to explainin'. Bust it. You down with OPP? Yeah, you know me. You down with OPP? Yeah, you know me. You down with OPP? Yeah, you know me.
Enough of my yammering. Now let's really focus last couple minutes here on Pete Allen. Let's talk more about you. Tell me anything else you want to talk about your writing, your editing, my editing.
More editing than writing these days. I am, of course, like all editors, I'm a writer as well. Have recently gone back to school for the third time to make sure I finish this time. And am getting an English degree, because how appropriate is that? and am learning a lot about the publishing industry from the top side now. Like the stuff that I've done the last couple of years, I have learned tons and tons about publishing in the small press and really the incestuous nature of the beast, like the people that you run into, you know, reading submissions and then seeing who's putting out different magazines and different books and stuff. It's very similar to when I worked in restaurants. It's just, you know, you run into the same people at different restaurants all the time when you go work. Same kind of idea. It's just an incestuous industry. Fun, though.
Okay.
And, there's a literary magazine at the university I'm currently attending, and I do some editing for that.
Okay.
Yeah, just honing my editing and writing skills. And one of these days I'll be unemployed again so I can start writing again. Who knows?
So talk a little bit about that, about your, you know, how you think your editing, your perspectives have changed over the years on editing and writing.
Let's to be perfectly blunt, any jackass can have their webzine, you know. There's very little financial investment, more so, I mean, now, as you start to progress, you get a bit better at it, and you want to be more proud. So instead of a GeoCities website on Yahoo, you go ahead and invest in a domain. So, but really, when it comes down to it, and, you know, any jackass, and I was that jackass, can start a webzine, and I did. And my editing skills that I, you know, such as I had at the time, basically came from reading for pleasure. If I enjoyed a story, I would publish it in the web magazine. Once you start spending money on what is essentially, you know, started out as a hobby and a sort of community service, because there was other writers that just needed a place to display it that I was, workshopping with online and stuff like that. But once you start investing actual cash dollars into it, you become a little bit more finicky and a little bit more picky. And that's definitely happened. I would hope that I've become a better editor, but just also a choosier reader. Having said that, I don't want to demean web magazines in any way, because there's a lot of really good quality web magazines out there. There's also a lot of crap.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, that's really selling you're kind of making it sound like you're running a cheesy webzine, you know. But I mean, obviously CGP is a legitimate name. You know, I mean, you're small press, but I mean, it's a legitimate name, you know.
And that's, I think that's part of the way that I'm, you know, I'm sort of influenced now, because I'm back at, you know, I'm working for the man again. I'm back in the establishment, and I'm, you know, seeing the stuff that comes out of universities and stuff. But to, you know, to flip that over, universities have budgets to put out literary magazines. You know, you get literary, you know, you have a editor who then reads all these literary magazines every year, takes the best, you know, the best of their crop, and sends it to the picked editor for America's Best 100 Short Stories, you know, 2006.
Right.
Well, literary magazines overall, there's the percentages, like 95% don't actually pay anything. And there's not a lot of difference between literary magazines and the small press. The kind of things that they're looking for to publish, yes, that varies widely. But as far as the technical sort of aspect of it, And what actually happens with, cash flow and who gets published and the politics of it and all this other kind of business, there's not a lot of difference. So I sort of have this, you know, mentality in my brain of being intimidated by the literary press, but it's just not, it doesn't wash. Like that sort of colors, you know, what I was talking about before. And I don't mean to demean our press or any of the small press. At all, because there's a lot of quality stuff coming out of the small press. I think my only point is, yes, a lot of what people say about, you know, small presses or publishing on the internet and that perception that it's not real publishing or it's not they're not real books or anything like that. There's a reason for that. There's a reason that people have come up with those, you know, these beliefs. Is it true in every case? Of course not. You know, is it true even overall? No, but they're, you know, when all you need is a Yahoo, you know, GeoCities website to start a webzine, yeah, and you know, a passing knowledge. Well, not even a passing knowledge of HTML. Like, they have templates now, so you know, you can just basically plug and play your text in there. I guess there's some validity to that.
Yeah, and I think you know, in these industries, you know, things move, perceptions change, like, you know, very, very slowly. I mean, they really, perceptions evolve. You know, they don't just change. I mean, it's taken a long time for, you know, for new trends to be accepted as legit. You know, it does take a long
completely.
Time.
Not too long ago, the university I'm attending right now, I sent the English department. There's you know, the one guy who always sends out the email to everybody about events around campus and, you know, readings that are going on and poets that are coming in and this sort of thing. And I sent him an email not too long ago and said, hey, you know, check out this website. This is who I am. I'm attending your school. If you ever want to, you know, if you ever have any questions or if you ever have any events about the small press and people are interested, I'm more than willing to talk about that and, you know, shamelessly plug our books and stuff. And apparently he actually forwarded that. I didn't sort of realize this until I was talking to a professor whose class I was taking and was talking about just publishing in the small press and what I did and stuff. And he's like, you're that guy? Oh, no, he said, you're a creative guy? I'm like, well, not just me, but yeah. You know.
Wow. It's not,
but yeah, so there, and that has engendered a lot of conversations with people. I took a literary publishing course a couple quarters ago, and that engenders a lot of, there's still a lot of ignorance among the mainstream about, you know, what the hell is, you know, what the hell are ebooks? What the hell is, you know, print on demand, or what the hell is this? You know, there's still a huge lack of just the, of knowledge about, you know, where the technology is going in a lot of ways.
Right. I mean, right. That's probably the trend in all other medias too. I mean, and I've definitely seen that with patio books, as you know, I mean, a lot of the patio books authors have great numbers, but yet people say like, well, I don't know what that means, you know? So, all right. So you're based out of Vancouver. Now have you noticed anything about being Canadian in this industry? You think there's anything to do with it or not at all?
That's a really good question. I might have to think about that for a second. I should probably clear that up. I'm actually personally not Canadian. My wife is.
Okay.
I moved to Canada when I was 16, and I've lived there for, well, ever since. So I'm not going to give away the magic number, but it's a good 20 years.
Okay.
Now, and bearing in mind that I, you know, started this in Canada and there was no internet when I still lived in America. Mm-hmm. Vancouver's a really tech-oriented town. It's the same way that Seattle is. There's a knowledge of the technology that, you know, the first sort of test markets for high-speed internet, that's, you know, that's where they go, this sort of thing. So mm-hmm. I guess as far as internet publishing and stuff, I hadn't really noticed any difference between, you know, being in Vancouver or being in Seattle or, you know, because I didn't live in the middle of nowhere in Kansas. And I can pick on Kansas because I did live there before.
Okay.
As far as at least the technology side, it was sort of always just there. Like, I mean, I grew with it when I was there. I you know, saw it develop and started getting interested in that just as the growth sort of started happening. From the publishing side, it's a bit of a challenge, especially in the print media, because printing is so much cheaper in the States. But on the other hand, the publishing aspect, working with the National Library of Canada is a lot easier than working with the Library of Congress, and that's simply, I mean, just a factor of size. Canada has 10% of the population of the U.S., so. You know, and here's a perfect example. When I started The Swamp as a magazine, I registered for an ISSN number, which is, you know, the magazine equivalent of the ISBN number. Mm-hmm. And the National Library of Canada had a website. And now, and again, this is 2001, so this is, you know, not... Everything wasn't quite as automated. Even, you know, there wasn't even a lot of online banking at that point. There's still a lot of, you know, paranoia about stuff that, you know, ooh, I don't know if I should buy on Amazon. Right. So anyway, National Library of Canada had an online application for registering for an ISSN number. And I remember it really well because I thought, okay, this is a government outfit. This is a government operation. This is going to take me forever. So I'll go ahead and get started. And I think it was like a Friday night. I was online and I registered for the number. Monday morning I had it, at probably by about noon.
Okay.
And I was just like, holy crap. You know, it was just, but, and I, that's sort of when I realized, you know, this, there's probably some poor bastard sitting in the National Library of Canada office waiting for somebody to please, for the love of God, use the web submission form. I could have been like his first guy ever. So in that aspect, exactly right. It was like 1001 or something. In that aspect, working in Canada as a publisher, you have a lot more access to things like, well, ISBN numbers too, right? ISBN numbers are free, even from the Library of Congress. The ISBN number itself is free, but if you're wanting to get an ISBN for your book, there's a processing fee involved, and it isn't they're not charging you for the ISBN number there, but there's a processing fee to get things sort of sorted out and this and that. And
right.
You know, I get a block of 10 ISBNs from the Library of Canada, yeah, online. You know, I just submit the form and say, hey, you know, here's what I need. And I don't know if it's just, you know, I don't know if the Canadian government is smaller or if they're more web friendly or what the deal was, but yeah, in that aspect, it was a lot easier dealing with, you know, Canadian government versus when I queried at the Library of Congress to see if I wanted to go that route.
Well, the problem is here that everyone's been appointed by Bush, so all his cronies.
I guess it wasn't pre-Bush. Really. Yeah, it comes down to it. Now that I think about it, you're right. Wait a minute.
So we just lost all the red staters.
Oh. Yeah, well, I probably would have said something to offend them sooner or later. They probably turned off as soon as they heard I was from Canada anyway. So.
That's true.
You rat bastards.
All right, well, give us a final plug or some final thoughts or a final whatever you want. Just go ahead and...
let's see, final plug? Yeah, I don't know. CreativeGuyPublishing.com. Go have a look. You can order us on Amazon. Chatbooks are available through online, smaller online retailers that are genre-oriented, Project Pulp, Shock Lines, Genre Mall, those kind of folks. Our trade paperbacks are available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your favorite online retailer, chapters.ca for our Canadian folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't really think of anything else. Thanks for having me.
All right, yeah, it's been fun having you on, Pete. Yeah, thanks for being on the Deadpan. Everyone go out and get all those CGP books, even the ones that don't have me in them.
Jack is not, you know, the only good author I've published. I've published many good authors.
Thanks, Pete. Hey, thank you for listening this far. Thank you to Pete Allen for being on. Thank you to everyone for contributing. I'd say thanks to the donors, but nobody donated anything this week. Come on, people, what do you think? I'm doing this for artistic integrity? No, I'm just kidding. If you do feel inclined to donate, then you know there's a donations button in the sidebar at www.jackmangan.com. Next episode is number 10, strangely enough, since it follows number 9. It's going to be a good one. We'll conclude the Dukes of Hazzard Star Wars research. We'll interview Murr Lafferty. It's a good one. And that episode will follow the format of the first 10. But beyond that, there are going to be some changes around these parts. Anyway, we're approaching 44 minutes. It's getting to be another long-ass episode. And I'm going to leave off with an instrumental piece of music of mine. This one is called Wine. It actually was supposed to be called Candles, but because of file name screw-ups and things, what you heard a few weeks ago, which was called Candles, which was supposed to be... Oh, never mind. Here's Wine. By me. Thanks for listening to The Deadpan. Keep it deadpan and come back next week.
www.jackmangan.com.